My name is Chris Jordan, and welcome. A story that yields itself and never ends. A series not necessarily about journal entries, rather someone on the other side, notes and thoughts, emotions and experiences that shape narratives about life incarnate. Welcome to the 15-year journal. Okay, so once again, welcome to this podcast series with myself, Chris Jordan. It's umbrellaed under the title, The 15-Year Journal, A Bunch of Statements. So statements, yes, I know, are exactly what the world needs to hear more of these days, right? I know. After all, we are in the age of individualism, and so a bunch of conversation and shared thought is not up for debate. I'd like these statements to have a bit of depth. Let's try provoke our own thoughts to take action in our own lives. Ours, mine, yours, no one else's. It's reality, or what we experience this day and age as something or anything but our own reality is, I suppose, there, laughable, if we look at the world around us, a reflection of a live-action journal speaking in a mono direction and reacting in a multi-misdirection is kind of what we look around and see as life. To this journal, I'd like to say that I would erratically open this particular book at random moments in my life, exactly in the past 15 years, pick up a pencil, pick up a pen, and take note of what my mouth could not express to anybody else, and I suppose dramatically cast it on paper. I never read another person's journal, so I am not quite sure of the decorum. I'm quite sure it's quite personal, whatever you make of it. And the closest thing I ever came to understanding what a journal was when I read The Color Purple, and I witnessed an account of live actions through the protagonist's point of view. So that was my point of reference, I guess. The next six episodes focus on random, unrelated narratives that are direct life lessons that you can relate to, as I like to do with most of my podcasts. Entries that are almost intangible to a nutshell speak for you while you don't have the right words to express the way you are feeling. But they are crass, they're rather raw, they're unfiltered, and they are real. If we go into a little bit of a fact mode, you might be happy to know that to keep a journal allows you to keep your thoughts organized. Diaries do help us to organize our thoughts, and we need a little bit of organization within this life of chaos that we lead. It does improve your writing, even if you're just jotting down whatever it is, because for me it centers your goals. It records your ideas on the go. It relieves some stress as well, and it allows you to self-reflect, which is super important. Boost your memory about anything and particular events that inspires creativity. I used mine as a bit of a kind of like an empty wall, where I would be a bit of an artist, and I would graphically represent certain aspects of my diary and journal, and I would definitely put pen to paper in terms of the literal word for anything else. Some of us just want to pick up an empty book and write as if no one is going to ever read it, which I think is a great idea. To get what it is that's on your mind out and out there is a way to self-psychoanalyze ourselves into a more calmer and more understood state. Our sense of self is an essential ingredient to our success as a species. Maintaining a self-identity means that we can tie together a coherent set of memories. It helps us to perform better based on past experiences. For example, it did allow our human ancestors to remember new techniques to find food and shelter, recalling how they dug something up or where they found something or exactly who did what. Really was a way that we could find the earliest form of journaling, I guess. A second benefit is the ability to track complex social interactions in human groups. So allowing individuals to achieve higher social status, convincing others to work to help them, and obtain a couple of friends, a couple of confidants, some allies on the way. I myself, I want to start with a graphical representation of, I suppose, a word mantra that aptly fits the description of what appears on the very first and second page of my journal, which is "Dare to be great." So I took out a pen and I just kind of, again, illustrated this particular mantra. I put a pen to paper, and it's something that I learned long ago from a station manager of mine back at campus radio. It's not my life mantra for life, as I say there. It worked its context, I would say, and its relevance in certain aspects of my life. And definitely back then was very influential, and wanted to learn a little bit more from the right people. I found this very exhilarating and quite liberating. As I say, in relation to the concept of healthy individualism, this was key. Today is very important. Stating the obvious, today is important because it's about who you are, how you feel, where you're going, what you want out of the day, and I suppose, what do you want out of life at this particular moment? To look at the past or future is to trivialize the now. It's rather easy to remain present. We all do it. Little of us claim it. For everything at this and every moment, which is always right in front of our eyes, it's the first frontier to self-respect. And the tangible outcomes of having and harboring that kind of respect that is rather unique and special, and so needs a particular context of attention and a particular context of care. If we take up a call to action, a dare, a greatness, right? As it said, a dare to be great. It comes with a risk, uncertainty, and at least 50% probability of expecting failure. And the construct of faith definitely comes into immediate play. I want to go to 2006. See, I didn't do anything else. I just lived on that mantra. And I felt that was important enough to put into my journal. Move to 2006. It was a hard year. That I recall. That was the umbrella topic of that. I definitely needed to reach out to a higher power. I did it with anything but grace. My 2006 entry that aimed directly at faith, where it lived and where it lived in my life, God, the luxury of a divinity, that a mass majority of accountability and understanding in living could be cast just so easily towards. Back in 2006, I seemed that I really wanted just a black and white cardboard cutout of God. I just wanted to understand. I wanted to rate him, and I wanted to put him in a box. And in doing so, claim ownership. You know, claim ownership to a divine God. And around blind faith. Intentions were good. Methodology was not so great. It was met with misintent. I was affected by the fact that parts of the world would have you as a believer to a God be an act actually of a fool. Someone that can't think for themselves. But the earliest concept of individualism was propagated by Christ, and that we have a personal and individual relationship with God. And the alternative was kind of really not what I wanted in life. The alternative is not believing in a higher power that puts high pressure on the now. That you live once, that you live finitely, that your choices right now have a real-time cause and effect on you and everyone and everything around you. Your choices are solely dependent and accountable. You need to show up all the time or squander time into oblivion. You must solely handle the possibility of a further worst-case scenario than that you've ever experienced before. Your existential realities about dealing with notions of spirit, soul, and purpose are all in your own interpretation. And that's massive. Repenting for your guilt is a one-way street. So you're repenting to yourself for any guilt that you have. And you have to become an expert in the most difficult type of forgiveness. That's forgiving yourself. No human being that is honest with themselves can say that they can master both man and mouse in their trials and tribulations when faced with a brisk reality of, well, reality, which normally implies that something sucks very majorly at the moment or that moment in your life. People cop out. It's what we do. In our most private of existence, we cop out continuously to counter-effect our own molds of reality that fit just rather imperfectly around us. So we get it. God is a luxury indeed. For me, God is an everything belief, existing in every nano-atom of reality and all it encompasses. From that diary entry in 2006, I have grown as someone that does challenge my beliefs. God, an energy that we are born and literally bred piece by piece from, a living force that has traction, movement in every cause and every effect. And so I understood it as follows, that we are created in an image, a complex sum of intricately balanced phenomenons that, if otherwise altered, would cease to exist in our understanding. I want to play the opposites game, the gap game. There are so many non-believers, which I can understand, forage and grow their own belief system. But what's odd and what's kind of frustrating to a large extent as a Christian is that Christianity seems to be the center of any bullseye for attack. Not an Islamic faith or a Hindu or a folk religion, to name a few. So from the lips of atheists, and these are the most generic scientific, when I say scientific, researched and from academia facts around the narrative of why believe in a God at all that I have found. I want to kind of go through a couple of questions that did come up and constantly do come up that are challenged. For example, why would the Abrahamic God, an all-loving and all-powerful, all-natural, allow natural evils to torment and kill people? Why can't he keep kids from getting cancer or stay the waves of tsunamis? In recent interviews, for example, the British comedian Stephen Fry delivered a vicious, scathing attack on the Judeo-Christian God when asked what he would say if he turned out that after he died, God, in fact, did exist. Well, he was bluntly and simply, he called this God a maniac. Would have intended to say it to his face, pointing to the large amount of unnecessary suffering in the world by which he, by definition, created and allowed. Why, if God so ardently wants us to know and accept him, does he hide himself from humanity? How does that comport with the God that Christians and Jews worship today? Why wouldn't Jesus return during his followers' lifetime? So many more questions plague the concept and controversial conversation around, well, Christian religion and Christian reality. You have a lot of time to waste if you want to get into an argument about religion. For any side or either side is fighting for a sense of identity and reason, something someone will not likely ever give up. The more we bicker about religion, the more I see the need for individualism in this world, which I understand is already hurting this world as it is. A true double-edged sword, a need to escape the squabbles of petty human beings that hide behind a flying flag of acute worship. I get it. Biblical bashing that comes from any belief system so desperate to spread a word of God's, but not near as desperate to act on those beliefs and be proactive in that instructive. We have Christian groups completely openly and blatantly racist on social media, where it makes you want to look in the opposite direction. Some say that having faith is a form of intellectual ignorance. But is that so bad? For those of us who question the boundaries of our own beliefs are always stronger for them, as more and more knowledge is pumped into our way of critical thinking. But also, why do we need to know everything about anything? It exhausts human rationale, and we don't have the capacity to really process the mass majority of conventional thinking. the more research and reading I did for this episode, the more immensely dirty I felt. I got angered, and the more ignorant I chose to be to these ideas and other notions I wanted to become, I did what every individualistic human being did, and began to mold a shape of something that made me feel better for what I wanted to believe on the inside. Everything in the known universe is said to have a direct and indirect impact and effect on every other said existence in the universe. The universe is built to build perfection. And in my belief in balance, down to the last detail, the notion of chaos lives only as a result of order, both integral to the procreation of existence and its constant energy distributed from one essence to another, from one state of being to another. What goes around comes around, right? For me, God holds this energetic balance together, where a soul, whatever pure energy you've amplified under your husk and shell, fits in, where your will, where you find a way, that in your existential place of good and peace exists. Note that, and note that with your relationship in the universe, with a God or a divinity, or on your own. Why is it firstly and foremost someone's belief system that is on the up for graphic attack? Not the sports team that you support, not the political party that you're voting for, hell, not even your stance on child rape is as seductive a piece than what your existential base is foundated on is. It speaks volumes in the mindset of a being created and designed to love and live with empathy that on a daily has conscientious decisions to make. Why do you even care? Because you actually don't. Why do you persist when you know it has no relevance or stand in your own life? Why indeed? We speak up when we shouldn't, and we shut our mouths tightly when the world around us is screaming out for some resonance of recognition. Learn to pick a better battle today, tomorrow, and forever. After all, if our ignorance is to be bliss, it's only because your welcomed silence was utterly golden. An attempt to bring peace to your world and the world around you. End journal entry 2006.